Welcome to GovInnovator. I'm Andy Feldman. Steve Goldsmith is with us today to talk about how public agencies, especially at the city level, are using data and analytics to cut costs and produce better results. Here's a clip.
I think what's new are several factors, actually. One is that the data mining tools are much better, right? Because in the past, agencies were reasonably effective in looking at data inside their agency's database case management system. But it was very difficult for them to mine data from other places, right? Like building permits or other interactions with government that, for example, a taxpayer might have. So now with these data mining tools, whether you're in the area of child welfare or you're in the area of tax, you can look over lots of data and identify clues as to what you should do.
Steve Goldsmith brings a wealth of knowledge about public sector leadership and management, having served as the mayor of Indianapolis, as well as the deputy mayor of New York City. He's currently a professor at the Harvard Kennedy School, where he directs the Data Smart City Solutions Project. His new book, co-authored with Susan Crawford, is titled The Responsive City, Engaging Communities Through Data Smart Governance. He joins us by Skype from Boston. Steve, welcome.
My pleasure to be here.
So, Steve, your book focuses on the use of data and analytics by cities to improve the performance of programs and policies. How do you see that movement connected to the broader results movement, and what do you think is driving it?
Well, in a period of time where, you know, we're not very stressed for money, agency leaders, elected officials, tend to measure performance, I think, inadvertently by more activities. But as budgets get stressed and demands go up, each of those activities has to produce more of whatever the specified output is, right, or outcome. And so I think the results movement, the evidence-based movement, the data movement is a way for officials now to have more effectiveness and more outputs per kind of unit of activity. And that is broadly catching on, I think, across the country. At Harvard's Kennedy School, lots of courses talk about public value. How does one create public value? And the performance movement often measures activities thinking they produce public value. So we look at the homeless issue in New York City under the leadership of then homeless commissioner, then deputy mayor, Linda Gibbs. And so Linda comes into our department one day and says, how do we measure value? How do we measure performance in this department? And you know, her employees say, well, we measure it by the number of shelter beds we provide for those who are homeless, right? So this sounds really logical, and you can imagine if that's your measurement, then you work really hard to create more shelter beds. You know, she kind of looks at them and goes, no, I'm not sure that's right. I think that's a definition of failure, right? The definition of success is when we prevent homelessness. Now, we may have to produce these shelter beds, but that's not our measure of success, right? So now you stop and think about that and say, well, that's a pretty powerful change in the orientation of the department. And now with the data tools we have, which is, I think, the most exciting part. So if you take the more sophisticated definition of public value, and then you look at the data tools. So in the previous definition of our success, you just count beds. Now you have to figure out, oh my goodness, how do we actually prevent homelessness? You know, does this family need drug therapy, or do they need mental health care, or do they need to, are they the victims of spousal abuse, right, or discrimination? You know, what is it that's caused them to be homeless? And if we can anticipate that, right, how could we correct it? So how do we deliver services to specific families in certain precarious circumstances? So now we have predictive analytics, you know, what works, a lot of data that allows us to do it, a more sophisticated definition of public value, and you can begin to see how powerful it is, the changes for the way government should operate.
As you know, the term big data is used now often enough in public management that it really is a buzzword. But in your book, you provide concrete examples of how cities are using data and analytics to produce real program improvements and real cost savings. So I want to jump right into those examples, starting with Philadelphia, where they've used data and analytics to improve their parole system. Tell us about that.
It's a great example. I mean, what we're trying to look at is how one can use data, big data, actually sometimes not so big data, to better allocate the resources of an overly stressed department. So Philadelphia Adult Probation and Parole Department, similar to departments around the country, big increases in caseloads, slight decreases in probation officers. How do you use each probation officer the best? Well, they looked at in Philadelphia with the help of experts from Wharton, 120,000 cases nationwide with some machine learning to try to analyze those cases. They developed a better risk model based on that analysis. They then better understood how the classification of offenders should occur so that those offenders who needed more care received more care. Those who didn't need any care at all, right, where you can imagine that some of the actions of a probation officer were making no difference, they were allocated less time. So in the end, what you see is 28% increase in caseload, 15% reduction in staff, but yet better results from the parole and probation department because of the way they classified risk, the way they prescribed the cases. And it's like a lot of things in government where many of our departments produce kind of equal amounts of activity, irrespective of whether that activity produces results. So we've got predictive analytics, looking at large numbers, better classifying offenders, and better results.
Shifting now to New York City, you provide an example from the Department of Finance where they used data to increase the productivity of auditors in their search for tax evaders. Tell us about what they did and what the results have been.
Yeah, this was a great example. There was a fellow in Mayor Bloomberg's last term, David Frankel, just, you know, like the perfect public servant, totally committed to trying to do what's best with what's available. And he knew that if he audited more cases, he would produce more revenue for the city. So one theory was, well, we'll just ask for more auditors, and therefore we can audit more cases. But the city, even though he could produce revenue, wasn't eager, given a stressed budget, to add personnel. So then he went back and said, okay, let's do this. If we used data analytics against our tax and finance base, could we identify more accurately those individuals and companies that should be audited? So you can imagine in this situation, right, that in a set of 10 cases assigned to an auditor, if we could increase the likelihood that each of those cases would yield a positive result, right? And if we decrease the, if you will, kind of the false positive, right? If we decrease the number of innocent taxpayers who were harassed by auditors, so you're going to increase those who deserve the audits and decrease the numbers who don't, then you, for the same number of people, you'd have an increase in productivity, right? Because you have a higher yield. So this is a great example because David looked, and in 3 years, essentially, he increased back payments received by almost $300 million with, you know, no change in auditors, but with a substantial increase in the number of cases audited that resulted in a fine or a back payment. So this is a kind of classic case of big data analyzing lots of cases. New York City is a big place, better targeting of those who need the need attention.
Those are terrific examples, Steve. I want to step back at this point and ask you the broader question of what's new about these examples. In other words, we know that cities and other jurisdictions have been using data, analyzing data for a long time, but you argue in your book that there really are new opportunities and capabilities to do this. Articulate for us what is new that public managers should be aware of.
Well, it's an interesting question because, I mean, everybody, I've been in government for, you know, 25 years, and, you know, we think of ourselves as having used data for a long time. I think what's new are several factors, actually. One is that the data mining tools are much better, right? Because in the past, agencies were reasonably effective in looking at data inside their agency's database case management system, but it was very difficult for them to mine data from other places, right? Like building permits or other interactions with government that, for example, a taxpayer might have. So now with these data mining tools, whether you're in the area of child welfare or you're in the area of tax, you can look over lots of data and identify clues as to what you should do. So that's one issue. Second, I think that the modeling tools have gotten easier to use, right? So some of it requires sophisticated data scientists, but some of it is just giving better tools to those in the departments who are want to ask important and probing questions. And then lastly, I it only makes a difference if the leader of that department or the leader of that agency or even the elected leader of that jurisdiction gives discretion and authority to his employees or her employees to do what's right. In other words, if you have to do the same thing with every case regardless, then you can't take advantage of the data. So it's just a long way of saying, I think it's a combination of the technology tools, the sophistication of the analytics, and the willingness of elected and appointed officials to give more discretion to their agency heads and employees in looking for the right thing to do.
You highlight in your book, Steve, some of the leaders among cities in terms of using data and analytics. But for many cities out there, they're just getting started finding ways to get their feet wet with this subject. What's your advice about some initial steps that a jurisdiction or even a program could take?
Right. Well, it's not every city or state that has a on-call data scientist, right? The skill sets are a little tough to come by. But I have a kind of a practical example. If a leader, city, state, or federal, wants to do more with data, I would call in their largest data vendors, right, who runs their work assignment system, who runs their HR system, who runs their accounts payable system, and say, you know, we've got a lot of transaction data in your system. How could we mine that data for better results, right? Because one of the things that's happened is as we become more informational dependent, we have a lot of governments running transaction systems that sit on huge amounts of usable data. And if we push our vendors a little bit, they'll help us come up with suggestions about how to deliver services more effectively. It's not, you know, it's not the broad-based enterprise solution, a data analytics center like Indiana set up. It's not the data scientists that do their skunk works in the corner of New York City, City Hall. You know, it's not the work that Mayor Emanuel has done broadly across Chicago government, but it's a place to start, and you can unlock a pretty simple value, right? You assign your potholes to your crews in the right order, right? The classic kind of FedEx, UPS, do you have left turns or right turns for your trucks? I mean, there's just lots of opportunity, and I suggest that people think about their current systems as a place to start.
The book is called The Responsive City, Engaging Communities Through Data Smart Governance. My thanks to Steve Goldsmith for sharing some of the insights from the book with us, and thanks for listening.